Welcome to the 10K Collective podcast. Listen, if you want hacks, my friend, I'm afraid you're in the wrong place. Our philosophy has grown out of the 10K Collective London Masterminds. Members, by the way, make between $500,000 and $7 million a year in e-commerce, most on Amazon. Many have doubled revenue in the last 12 to 18 months. If you're that kind of person, this podcast is made for you. We're not puritanical. We use hacks. We just don't think you should focus on them if you're building a real business. Instead, we focus on what's been proven to work in the group. Real brand building, clear strategic objectives, courageous long-term goals, and long-range thinking. If you like that focus, keep listening, and welcome to the 10K Collective. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the 10K Collective podcast, the place to be for six, seven and eight figure Amazon sellers. I'm really delighted to welcome to the show or welcome back Rick Cesari, who is, well, how to summarize Rick? He's a 30-year direct response marketing veteran. He's worked to build some brands that are so famous that I've heard of them, even though, for example, Lean Green Grilling Machine, the George Foreman grill, I'm not into boxing and I've never owned a grilling machine, but even I've heard of it. It's just that famous. And other things like GoPro cameras, which everyone in the world who's into extreme sports uses, Sonic Care and on. He's now using this amazingly deep and serious, really serious knowledge that he's gained to help Amazon sellers. He's also an author. I understand that he's on a mission to write 5 books in 5 years, which we'll have to talk about, but he's written By Now, and his second book was Building Billion Dollar Brands, and he's just brought out a new book called Video Persuasion, which is what we're going to be talking about, how to create video for Amazon sellers. So, Rick, that's a hell of a CV or resume, as you would say. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Michael. Great, nice to be back again. I really enjoyed the first opportunity we had to speak.
Absolutely. So on our sister podcast, Amazing FBA, we worked with Rick a while ago, and one of the more profound episodes, I think, that we talked about. So tell us a little bit, before we plunge in, we're going to talk about how to create video for Amazon sellers, but tell us a little bit about your new book, Video Persuasion, and what motivated you to write that.
Yeah, well, thanks for asking. You know, there's a lot of information out there online and a lot of different software services you can buy as far as video production. But what I really focused on in this book, Video Persuasion, is what is the type of content and messaging that you can use to first engage people? Because, you know, when people are start looking at video online, they don't have a long attention span. So how do you, can you hook them into your videos? Second, what content is most appealing to people? And then third, I use video as a marketing tool. So how do you get and use video to get people to take a specific action? And then if you think how that ties into the people that are listening to the podcast, Amazon sellers, the more that we can use video to get them to buy your products, push the buy button, the more, you know, the more powerful that is. So in this book, it's all about really the content of the video and how you can use it to persuade people to take the action that you want them to take.
Excellent. So it's direct response marketing in the sense of trying to get people to take an action. And I know that that ties into a broader aspect of your work, which is about your company, which is called Direct Branding. So we're going to talk about that in more depth, but just a quick summary. What is direct branding as opposed to direct response?
You know, I'm a big believer. You can spend a lot of money, quote unquote, on trying to build your brand. And I'm a big believer in building your brand by... It's a process where you don't wait and spend a lot of money and make sure everything's perfect and all the colors and the fonts and everything. I'm a big believer in selling the product first, getting it out into the marketplace, getting customer feedback, and then improving the brand as you go along. So that accomplishes two things. You're building your brand, but two, if you're starting a business or any business needs cash flow, I'm just a big believer in selling to create your brand. And so the idea of direct branding is you're selling your product while you're building your brand. And it's building your brand through direct sales, direct response marketing, D2C marketing type of thing.
Excellent. And that really ties in, by the way, with a lot of the most successful people in the masterminds in London that I've worked with, in some cases for coming up 2 years now, and they're still coming because we keep discussing fresh topics. And I love that. And I think this kind of thing is so, so important. And that conceptual level, and that's one of the things I want to do with the 10K Collective podcast. Video marketing is a tool, or it's a tactic, it's a weapon in our arsenal, but it fits into this broader concept of making money whilst building a brand. It's not either or. It's not just trading a load of rubbish in order to get money now, but trashing your brand or spending a lot of money and effort on building a brand through adverts that don't make any money. And that really does tie in with the philosophy of the most successful members of the mastermind, who keep saying things like, the best marketing we got, or the best branding, is wonderfully presented products that look beautiful and get gifted and get used, and people see it and use it and experience it again and again. So there's something really powerful that, as Amazon sellers or physical product sellers, we have, isn't there, that having our products out there is at the same time branding as well as a sale. And sometimes I think we forget the power of that.
Oh, absolutely. And I people just underestimate the power of word of mouth marketing. And the direct response marketing is basically a way of just getting the product into people's hands. They like it, they tell their friends about it, and that's magnified these days through social media and also leaving reviews on Amazon. So it's kind of like everything I've been doing for the last 30 years, almost there's more tools that make it actually easier than it's ever been, as long as you're doing things correctly.
Easier than it's ever been. Okay, interesting. That's a very tempting statement. So as long as you're doing things correctly implies, okay, we better find out what that is. So I know that you've been doing a huge amount of writing, but also a lot of work with very practical day-to-day Amazon sellers who need to make cash flow, as you say, particularly in something like physical products business, so cash flow intensive, right? So if any approach that doesn't do cash flow isn't going to work. So let's get to the nuts and bolts then. So the first question is what to put in the video. You talked about three aspects: engaging the viewer quickly, keeping them interested, and how to structure, some kind of response. So tell us about that. What's the 60,000 foot view from this?
Yeah. So in doing research for the book, I did a lot of online research and using statistics from platforms like HubSpot and Cisco and things like that. And what I found is that the three most popular types of content that people were looking at broke down into three categories: tutorial videos, which are how-to videos, like instruction videos; demonstration videos that demonstrated a product or service for sale; and testimonials of people talking about a product or service that they liked. I believe that those three types of videos are the most important to put on your website, on Amazon. You need the tutorial video, which explains the product, but as far as selling the product, to me, a combination of using a demonstration video along with testimonials is really powerful. And we've seen increases in conversions with our clients that are putting together good demonstration videos for their products. And it sounds like it's simple to make a demonstration video, but this is where I've been able to leverage all the experience I've had in my background making television infomercials and direct response programs. Because if you didn't make a show that was interesting or sold the product, the show wouldn't work. You'd waste a lot of money, all the production money you spent on that. And so you kind of had to learn what got people to respond to the different messages in the show. And, I go in a lot of detail in the book as far as the different steps to building a good demonstration video. But I think that that's a really powerful tool for both e-commerce sellers and people for your listings on Amazon and your products on Amazon, is to create really great demonstration video and, if possible, include some testimonials.
Okay, so it sounds like you're saying tutorials are effective, but the more powerful one for getting sales is testimonials and demonstration. And you've obviously honed your craft by having the discipline of you know, TV producers probably shouting at you. And my tiny experience of TV, they can get quite emotional about things that don't work. So I imagine that's a great discipline. So, okay, so you're kind of teasing us with you need to do it well. What are the characteristics of making a great demo video then? What would you say the main principles, or indeed the main step-by-step, if it is as simple as that?
Yeah, well, let's take a look, and this will hold true for both video and even still images, because I look at a lot of Amazon listings, and right away I can see that a lot of them could be much better. And when I say much better, things, little things you can do to help increase sales and conversion. Now, it's not going to increase traffic, but when the people are at your listing, will help increase the conversion. And one of them is really simple. Well, there's a lot of different things. So a lot of people will take a product and will just see very cold images of the product. If there's any way to insert, and I know that you know, you have to have an initial image of just the product itself, but the more that you can incorporate a human element into any of those images, and this holds true for video too, where you're showing people using the product and or a body part like a hand or something in the image, it sounds like a little thing, but it really goes a long way to helping these things convert better. The second thing, which a lot of people don't do, is I'm a big believer in graphics and titles. And if you can create a product image that includes infographics on it in your listings, your images, where those titles are calling out the benefits of the product, again, that's going to help with conversion. I work as a partner in a small Amazon agency where we help other people sell on Amazon. And when we redo some of their listings and include the infographics on the image calling out the benefits, we almost always see an increase in the amount of conversion that we get. So that same thing is true with video. And let's talk about a demonstration video. So I'm talking about a real specific thing like adding titles to it. And if you think about it, if this video is running on the social media channels where people might be listening to it without sound, titles even become more and more important. So that's one thing where I've seen a lot of video producers, video production companies kind of stumble because they, especially the ones that have branding implanted in their minds, they think that it'll ruin the look of the video or something. And that could not be further from the truth. People want information, otherwise they wouldn't be watching your video. And then really from a demonstration video, you know, to get into a little bit more of the nuts and the bolts, I'm a big believer in letting people know right up front what your video is about. Now, I give you a great example with the GoPro commercials. If anyone remembers seeing them on TV or even some of the ones online, we started every commercial out with a GoPro logo. So you knew right away that this was going to be talking about a GoPro camera. I don't know how many times you've started watching a video either on TV or online, and it takes you, you know, how many seconds or even longer before you even know what the heck the video is about. So
yeah,
for me,
absolutely.
And it's true. And yet yeah. People always do that. And so I'm a big believer in just really getting right out front, put your brand logo right up front so people will know. Now, your goal is not that you're going to get every single person watching this to stay tuned into the video, but the people that are interested in what your product is or what your service is now going to know what you're going to talk about. And that buys you a little bit more time as they start watching the video. So those are just a couple few little things that I make sure that I do all the videos. But going back to the GoPro story really quick, you know, we would start with a brand logo. We would put user generated footage, whether it was snowboarding, jumping out of airplane, mountain biking, whatever. And then we would end with an offer. And so that's the other thing where I see people really fall down on their demonstration videos. They don't have a call to action. Even if it's as simple as save 10% or buy one, get one free. I go into lots of different offers in my book, Video Persuasion. But the most important thing to remember for your listeners are make sure you have a call to action in your demonstration video. It doesn't make any sense at all to create this wonderful demonstration video. You get people excited to buy and you don't tell them what the next step is. And that's another thing I see happening a lot online, that people don't have a really clear call to action. And it doesn't need to be a hard sell. It just, people, you know, go push the buy button on Amazon, whatever makes the most sense. And if there's some incentive you can give people, that's even going to increase conversions even a little more.
Makes a lot of sense. And again, coming back to your big sort of, if you like, branding, it's sort of, what's the word, business strategy point of view or philosophy, the direct branding thing tells you very simply, doesn't it? If it's direct marketing, you want to get a call to action. If it's just branding, you just want to make people feel good about the product. But if it's direct branding, I guess what you're saying is you want to make people excited about the product and perceive your brand as having a high value, but then you want them to take action. So it makes 100% sense. What you're saying ties in beautifully with your philosophy, which is, it's what I really like about your approach, is that a lot of people have very tactical level things which work day to day, month to month, but are actually destructive to building a serious brand long term. But you're combining the two in one go, which is fantastic.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to be mutually exclusive. And that was something that many years ago in marketing, it was either you were a branding person or you're a direct response person, and they can go together very easily. So
yeah, I like that. And the thing is that you look at early internet, it's a little bit like sort of used car sales traditionally was. And I did some selling double glazing for a few months in my youth, which was horrible, but taught me a lot about closing. But it was pretty grim. And I suppose a lot of people think that a direct response website looks like it's 1999 and it's like buy now. And it's interesting that your first book was called Buy Now, because even that makes you think, oh, that sounds very salesy. And then on the other hand, there's the beautifully produced adverts, like you said, and I want to dig into this a bit. If you watch an advert where there's a lot of very generic feel-good stuff going on, and I don't watch a lot of TV, but when it happens, or on YouTube more for me now, and somebody's like, there's a horse running across a beach and there's people smiling and having drinks, I'm like, this is either for a mobile phone or a beer commercial or
a drug company.
A drug company. That's maybe more an American thing. Unfortunately, we don't get so much of that here yet. But yeah, but occasionally, yeah, you're right. I'm like, you know, Seneca or whatever. But you have to kind of guess what it is, and then they make you wait to the end. Now, these guys have been spending a lot of money, and I'm sure they know what they're doing, and there's a reason for that. But I'm very interested that you started with the GoPro logo. And the other thing you said, you're not trying to get everyone who's watching to watch the rest of it. You're trying to pull out certain people. So tell me more about that way of thinking. Why are you not emulating, like, you know, Budweiser, which you never know that until the end that it's a Bud advert, for example? Why are you going a different route with that?
Well, mainly because I don't, and the majority of my clients don't have hundreds of millions of dollars to spend on advertising. You know, this goes back to really the direct response mindset and getting the advertising to pay for itself, whether you're on TV, you're on Facebook or Instagram or YouTube. And this is just really borne out by years and years of testing what works, from getting people to the point of watching the video to actually buying the product. This isn't like just a theory I have. This is, you know, done from really lots and lots of experience, and more important, lots of trial and error. And when you do that type of brand commercial that is feels good, but doesn't really asking you to do anything, nobody really responds to it. So then the next question, which I think you kind of asked already, is why do they do it? And to be honest with you, I think that it's just has to do with a mindset that's hard to change. And if you think about what's happening to big companies like, I don't know if Budweiser is a good example, but Procter & Gamble, or, you know, any of the big Fortune 500 companies that are product companies, they're getting killed now by what we call micro brands that are using direct response concepts and direct to consumer marketing, because that's what people are responding to. And so they're just stuck in a way of doing business, just like brick and mortar stores, that they don't know any other way of doing it. Yet in the long run, unless they have lots and lots of money to spend, it's something that's not going to be successful.
Very interesting. So, yeah, I mean, either which way, I guess we don't have to emulate multi-billion dollar brands if we haven't got millions in our pockets anyway. But I guess what you're saying as well, which I think is really important for us to get over that mental barrier. For example, the thing you mentioned earlier, specifically, if somebody's used to producing a certain kind of video, and then you want to put text all over it so that when you're scrolling through your Facebook feed on silent while your partner's trying to sleep in bed, that's what my wife does at midnight. If she can't sleep, she sits there scrolling through Facebook feed, and you're not going to be able to communicate unless you put that in there. And I suppose it's getting over that kind of pseudo artistic perfectionism and going, actually, what we're trying to do is communicate here. We're not trying to create something beautiful and create the most amazing association. We're trying to communicate and get a response. So I really like that you're getting over the shame of direct response. Like, direct response can also be beautiful. Like, small is beautiful. Direct response is beautiful if done the right way. So
I think sales are beautiful.
Sales are beautiful. none of us are going to argue with that. So now let me come to another question, which comes up with the whole thing of paid advertising. I guess in many of us are very familiar with Facebook ads as a way to drive launches. Although I would say that there are many question marks about how effective it is nowadays, but that's a different question. But testing and cash flow. So let's talk about testing first, because obviously there is a gap between what we think is going to work and sometimes what does work. How can we engineer things such that we learn through trial and error, but don't run out of cash before we found an advert that breaks even or makes a profit?
Wow, that's a really good question. I'll do the best I can to answer that. But first of all, let me just say I'm a big believer in testing everything. And even when you find something that works, we continue to test to see if we can get it to work even better. And that's, you and I were having a conversation right before this interview started about working with startup companies. And, you know, early in my career, I could start companies, and I think you still can do it on a shoestring budget, but it is a little bit more difficult. So I don't think there's a lot of ways around. The more budget that we have to do testing, the better off we're gonna end up result wise. And I know that's probably not answering your question, but I definitely believe in testing everything, because if getting to a point, and almost every one of the big brands you talked that we built through direct consumer marketing, there was lots and lots of testing that went into that and lots of failures. You know, I'll just talk about a funny one real quickly. You said you're not a boxing fan. And when we made the first George Foreman grill infomercial, we thought it would be really cool. He had just won the heavyweight championship of the world at 46. He was the oldest one to do it. And we went to HBO and we bought, for $15,000, we bought like 30 seconds of footage of him knocking out his opponent, Michael Moore. And we started the TV advertisement with that boxing footage. And it was a dismal failure, because just like you, the target audience didn't like boxing. TV buyers back then and online buyers, these statistics are still true, are mostly women, just because it's the nature. Women do a lot of the shopping for homes and things. And so they hated boxing. And so we went back to the drawing, did a test, didn't work, went back to the drawing board, took out the boxing footage, and then it became a huge, huge success. So the value of testing, I agree 100%. How you can get it done economically, I don't have a lot of good tips that I can share with your listeners, except for the fact that I do it with every video that I do, and it's important to do to get the success that you're looking for.
So I would say, I guess in a way to reframe my question, thank you for your honesty about that. I guess two things to say. One is to recognize the value and critical importance of testing. It's not a nice to have. It's absolutely basic to creating a real business. And I think that the second implication of that is, okay, there it's worth putting money aside or raising money or saving more money if you're starting for your own money, which a lot of people do to begin such businesses. It's worth raising more money to specifically allocate to testing, not to immediate necessarily making sales, because the value of the data is great. And I guess a lot of people don't realize that and don't budget for that. So I suppose it's not so much a question of how do you make it more efficient as to recognize the importance of it in the first place and to make your peace with that and to make a priority of it. And I do find that with newbies, people who are new to the Amazon space and wanting to start a business, like all of us, and I'm the same, they want a quick win, and that's understandable. But I think they want a quick, big win. And actually, if you recognize it's a marathon, not a sprint, then you start to frame your use of money accordingly and go, right, the win is going to be framed as we've got a test that broke even after the 10th iteration, rather than we made, you know, $100,000 in sales within the first 12 months, right?
Oh, yeah. No, there's a lot of science that goes into it. You know, when we're trying to market a product, we do a financial pro forma that, depending on the advertising medium we're using, we know that if for every dollar of advertising, I'm making this number up, but let's say we're selling a hair dryer or something, we need to generate $1.56 in revenue. So that kind of sets the bar, so we know what our goal is. And then when you do your test, you know that if any, regardless of the advertising you're doing or the platform, if you're not generating a minimum of that to break even, you're losing money on every sale or every customer acquisition. You know, there's science behind it, is I guess the best way. And I guess the other thing that can help get you to the goal sooner without spending as much in the testing process is really understanding the concepts that should be in your video to make them work. One of the easiest ways to do that is look at other videos on YouTube that are selling products, whether they're in your category or other categories that you just like, that you know are working successfully, and kind of study them and see what they're doing, and see if there's a way that you can be doing some of those same things. And that kind of research is a way of helping you get to a point where you can spend less on testing because you've done your due diligence or your research up front, as opposed to just throwing stuff out there and hoping something works.
Well, absolutely. And that's one of the primary things that I hope that this podcast in general as a channel, but this particular episode can help people with, because if people buy your book, for Frank, that the power that great books have had in my life compared to like me spending 10 or 20 bucks to buy them is extraordinary. So people go and buy your book and get the basic principles of the things you said. Okay, don't forget to put a call to action in, for example, lead with the logo, just a few simple principles. And then, as you say, go and get an example of how people are implementing that. That should be able to short circuit the learning curve and the cost by huge amounts, I'd imagine. So exactly. I think really the best answer to the question, how do we minimize the cash spend, is probably go buy Rick's book, find some great videos, and then create on the basis of that, right? That's probably the simple answer.
And it's not just my book. I'm a huge believer in learning through other people's experience. And I go to a lot of webinars, seminars, mastermind groups. I know you run a really good mastermind group that I'm a huge advocate, because, you know, one of the nice things about the consulting I do, I work with lots of different companies, and one company might be doing something that's working that the other company isn't. And I can share that technique with them. And I kind of get an overview of a little bit of what's working in the marketplace and what's not, and sharing that information. And a great way to do that is, like I said, through mastermind groups, through books. And so I'm a huge believer in learning through other people's experience. I do want to share one thing with your listeners, and well, two things actually. First is, when we talked about the different types of video content that is the most engaging or the most viewed online, I mentioned tutorials and demonstration. So I have a whole paper that people can download on my website, ricksazeri.com, that talks about the three most engaging types of video content and how you can use it. So if they can go there, they can download that for free. But secondly, I think I'd like to share some other information about how three ways you can start a video to capture people's attention. And we talked about putting, you know, your product logo, your company logo, your brand logo at the front. But once you do that, how can you hook the viewer into the rest of the video? And, you know, three ways that I've used, and there's many, many ways, but three effective ways that I've used are, you can start your video with a question. Would you like to lose 10 pounds? Would you like to be more fit in the next 30 days? Would you, you know, whatever question would address a potential problem that the viewer might be having. So again, it goes to anybody that has that potential problem will stay to listen for the answer because that's what's going to be coming up in the video. So asking a question is a good way to start a video. Another really good way is to use a factoid. And that's basically exactly what it says. One of the most successful TV infomercials I ever did, it was for the Juice Man Juicer. And this was quite a while ago, but I started it out with the fact that scientists have just discovered an element, a natural element in broccoli called indole-3-carbinol that's been shown to prevent breast cancer. And I brought that fact up, and then right away people are interested. Wow, that's interesting. And I'll kind of listen to what else. And then the third way that you can start a video is with a short story, because people love to hear stories, and just think of a story that would make sense or tie into your product or service. It could be a real experience you've had or something else. And that's another way to get people hooked into a video.
Interesting. Okay. So those are things that remind me actually of advice I've heard about starting off a speech, which is interesting that to me, and I'm always looking for sort of big pricks of principles, because in a sense, I think it's a bit like Charlie Munger's, you know, mental models. I think if you really crack things at the principle level, then you start applying it across all your marketing. And so instead of getting obsessed with just slavishly copying what everyone else does, you can start to apply these things. So I love that. Start with a question, a factoid, or a short story. All three of them actually it reminds me of some advice I heard recently about how you start a good speech, which is quite interesting. But I guess you just need to be quicker, right?
No, I'm so glad you brought that up. I have an entire chapter in my book, Video Persuasion, about structuring a video. And a lot of it is done the same way you engage an audience when you're giving a speech. And so you kind of brought this up. You know, you and I never talked about this, but it's funny. So I want to, you know, talking about reading books, one of the books I read when I was much younger was by Dale Carnegie, and it was How to Win Friends and Influence People. And he had a formula for giving a speech that was very simple. And it was like, tell people what you're going to say, you say it, and then you tell people what you said. And that's a very simple formula, but I've used that formula for videos and I've had huge success with it. Just doing the format from the content of the video, I give them a short introduction tease about what's coming up in the video. I go into more detail in the body of the video. Then at the end of the video, I summarize what they just heard. And so I use a lot of speech analogies in my book as a way of creating engaging videos. Because if you think about it, when you're in front of an audience or you have a viewing audience for a video, you're trying to do the same thing. You're trying to keep their interest, keep them engaged. So the techniques that work for speaking also work for video.
I really like that. And one of the things I like that is we live in a world of constant change, but not just that Amazon, I mean, you know, when Trump tweets something, you know, I'd imagine the entire White House staff goes, okay, now what's going to change? And it's getting a bit like that in Britain now. I mean, it's been pretty crazy times, but, you know, it's the government and destabilize things. If you sell on Amazon, then Amazon likes to change the goalposts about every 3 months or maybe every six if you're lucky. So what I love is the opposite question for me. And just everyone spends their lives on podcasts going, what's changed? What's changed? I'm like, okay, what about the things that aren't changing? How about we get good at those? So I really love the fact that if you get good at this structure and a new technology gets invented like video, which I guess wasn't around for ordinary people in the Dale Carnegie's day. I guess you could shoot a Hollywood movie, but ordinary people didn't do that sort of thing, right? But the same principle applies. I really love the fact if you get this skill set down, it's probably good for the next 50 years, which for me is probably going to be the rest of my life. So it's a kind of evergreen skill set, right? I really, that comforts me a lot.
Oh, absolutely. I'm glad you brought that up, because what people don't realize is it's the distribution channels that change the way people receive information.
Hi, Rick.
But human nature does not change. Believe it or not, and this is, you know, whether we're talking about the techniques that work for giving a speech, but even more so, I always talk about that when it comes to direct response marketing. And there's techniques that they used way back in Sears catalogs and direct old time direct mail, that those techniques work for email marketing. The direct response copywriting that worked for direct mail also works for email. So it really isn't, and again, if you get really good at direct response marketing, direct response techniques, you do that by reading books from people that were successful in prior generations, not just what's working today, because that's where the foundation was laid. And if you understand all of that, then you have a powerful tool in your arsenal to use. And you have to always be aware that, you know, it might be Facebook one day, it might be Instagram one day, it might be Amazon. You know, 5 years from now, there might be another platform that's outdoing Amazon. And yet the principles of how to sell really aren't going to change, because you're really appealing to human nature, and human nature doesn't change that much.
Thanks for listening to the 10K Collective podcast. I really hope you found the show helpful. I mentioned the London-based masterminds we've been running since September 2017. Members of the 10K Collective Mastermind make a minimum of about £480,000 a year, well over €600,000 or dollars. To find out more about that mastermind, go to amazingfba.com/10KC, K for Kilo, C for Charlie. £1 million mastermind members make a minimum of £1.2 million a year. That's about $1.5 million or euros. To find out more about that mastermind, go to amazingfba.com/MPM. That's M for mother, P for Peter, M for mother. Thanks for listening.